weapon technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
2585 says the guy who directed The Beekeeper is the same director of Training Day. A really good director, actually. Training Day is one of my favorite movies.
It's a great movie.
Good flick.
That might not about what you know, it's what you can prove.
Love that movie.
And Denzel's girlfriend in the movie was Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
You have a type.
I don't deny it, sir.
Hey, if that's the type, I'm on board.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
She looked pretty good in that movie.
Brian told me during the break that I can stream Amazon, The Beekeeper on Amazon for $5.99. I don't know if I want to pay $5.99 to watch it, though. I might have to have a GoFundMe.
You can expense it.
I don't think I can.
If we make it a segment, come on. I don't think I can expense it.
Yeah. We have to start a GoFundMe so I can watch The Beekeeeper on Amazon. Everybody's saying that his favorite movie is, or the best Statham movie is Snatch.
Snatch, yeah. He was in a number of Guy Ritchie movies early in his career. I don't know if this dude's
been in Snatch and Crank.
I'm just going to step right past that, Joel.
I'm just asking a question. What's up with the movie titles? Forget the headlines.
Some people like one-syllable names. They think it's strong and it's catchy.
I didn't include the Guy Ritchie movies because I wouldn't classify those as his movies. He was in those movies, but he wasn't the main guy in those movies.
Gotcha. Have you seen Iron Claw? Someone said that's an awesome movie.
I have not seen Iron Claw.
That's not Jason Statham, though. I want to see it. My wife actually wanted to see it, too. I have to check that one out. Enough Jason Statham. We've talked way too much about Jason Statham on this show. Who was the worst coach that a Houston professional team has hired over the recent years? 713-780-3776. Who sticks out to you, Blankers?
Man, to me, this is a two-horse race, and it's close. I think it's Steven Silas, and it's David Culley. And I think that both guys, when we start talking about resumes and comparisons, both guys never being a head coach previously, being in the league forever as an assistant coach, neither guy had any kind of, really, I don't think was the right guy for the job regardless. But when you look at how it all played out, we're so over their heads. I think I'm going to say Steven Silas because he got more years to do it. I mean, Culley was one and done and with good reason. Silas probably should have been, but they kept hoping something was going to click and a switch was going to go on and they were going to change. And then you saw him stunt the growth of several of the young players, run an offense that anyone has seen at open gym, not be able to discipline his players, and when others tried to, have all hell break loose. And I just think Steven Silas was awful for the Rockets. I'll say him number one.
Yeah, I don't think Silas is good, but I don't think he's even close to the same stratosphere as David Culley. I think David Culley could potentially be the worst NFL coach of all time. They wanted him to be the rah-rah energy coach, keep the spirits high during a rebuild for at least 2 years, and they couldn't co-sign him for a second season, so they literally promoted his defensive coordinator as a quote-unquote interim head coach for another year before they finally hired D'Amico Ryans. Silas also, I think Silas would have been a head coach, been a head coach in the NBA at some point had the Rockets not hired him. Like, I feel he would have gotten his opportunity at some point. He was going to get a chance at some point if the Rockets didn't make that hire. That was never happening for David Culley. David Culley was never going to be a head coach of anything. Secondly, David Culley, and look, maybe he's partly retired or whatever, but no one was going to hire David Culley again. Steven Silas got a job the very next year. I think it's David Culley in a landslide.
Brian?
Yeah, I'm going to have to lean David Culley for this, just for that kind of that last portion there. Like, at least Steven Silas, I'm not saying he was the most qualified candidate, you know, that year, or the most qualified candidate the Rockets ever hired or anything like that, but David Culley wasn't even being considered as an offensive coordinator at the point. I mean, he was coming off seasons at Baltimore as the passing game coordinator where they were bottom three in passing yards, and a part of that was Lamar, but he also was a part of the offensive staff and the passing side for the Kansas City Chiefs in a year where the wide receivers had zero receiving touchdowns. So he wasn't even considered a plausible or worthwhile candidate as an offensive coordinator, much less a coach. I don't even know what term you want to throw to David Culley, but a puppet.
I would say incompetent.
But I think both were, because I think that when you look at it, Cully didn't have a roster of young players you were trying to develop, and the Rockets did. So he could just be the bridge guy, and whether he failed miserably as he did.
Well, he was trying to develop Davis Mills in theory.
Yeah, I think to Blanker's point, I do think that Silas created more harm.
Yeah, like, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
He had more talent that would like, you'd be in a much better spot now, and like it would have been a better situation for Udoka to walk into. Now, Ime's been able to overcome that, but I would say that he had more quality on his team that needed more development, whereas Cully didn't really have much on his team. Like they wasn't a good roster. But the biggest thing for me when it comes to Cully is like they knew what they were doing. They knew why they hired David Cully.
He was just the fall guy. He was a fall guy.
Mm-hmm. He was a bridge. But he was so bad, he couldn't be the second year. Like, think of that. Like, okay, our process is an organization, and you're Nick Caserio. Okay, our roster's terrible. We don't think in windows, but we look at two-year increments. He's literally said he looks at two-year increments and two-year windows, but he doesn't want to admit that now. But Cully couldn't make it into that second year. Why? Because he couldn't co-sign him for a second season, because Caserio would have looked like a bad general manager to co-sign him for a second season, even though it was part of the plan for them to be terrible and for him to be the energy guy. But he was so bad at his job, he literally had to get fired after 1 year.
But then Stone hired a guy that he thought was the guy, that was qualified, that was the man, that was going to be developing these kids, that was going to do everything that he needed a coach to do with this young roster of talent, and he looks terrible because Silas was the absolute worst guy for that job and did it for multiple years.
Yeah, I can understand the harm, but I mean, Silas got hired right away. Like he has coaching chops. Like,
he still has relevance in the league. I mean, David Cully has a position.
You know why? Because he came cheap and he's got a coach's dad's name and as an assistant coach. Some guys are just good assistant coaches.
But, I mean, you mentioned that like Stone thought he was a credible candidate. The league wasn't laughing at the Rockets when they hired Silas the way the league was laughing at the Texans when they hired David Cully.
Like, so Silas probably had other head coaching interviews, right, over the course
interviews
of his career.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Cully, did he?
Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think he'd ever been interviewed.
He was coming off, you know, a bottom five passing defense like 4 years in a row in the Ravens, a Chiefs stint where his wide receivers caught zero touchdown passes. He was just a complete laughable candidate.
But how did Caserio even find him? Like, how is that even an interview?
It almost felt like Mad Libs. Like, they pulled a name out of a hat.
Was Jack involved in that time?
I don't think he wanted Josh McCown, though.
That's
like,
true.
I don't think he was standing for David Cully. You know, like
The thing that bothers me is, at least from Caserio's perspective with Cully, he could admit his mistake and get it after 1 year. Stone let this guy go three. And so that it was collateral, the damage just kept stacking
up. That part of it, as far as the GM decision, mm-hmm. I think you're right. The decision by the GM was worse from Stone than it was from Caserio because of the more longer-term harm that he did to the young roster than what happened with the Texans.
And you had commodities that you wanted developed.
Right.
The Texans didn't really have those commodities. 2585, got to be Silas. We knew Cully wasn't going to be good and was a stopgap coach, but we sort of had expectations with Silas, and he felt miserably. That's more like I think that kind of that answer is kind of Cully, though. Like, you knew that Cully wasn't good, you thought Silas could be good. That's more about expectation than actual coaching chops, I think.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I think that Cully was just a guy that was never going to be on anybody's radar. I don't think that he no matter when you looked at his career, I don't think there was ever a time when he was going to be a guy that general managers that knew this league very well thought should be a head coach. Silas got a lot of credit for being the offensive coordinator for Luka and creating an offense around Luka. And I think that's why he got hired. So, you know, I think it's a two-horse race, like I said. I think you have a right to stand on that hill with Cully. I just think there's a lot that, because of the fact that there was already talent on the roster that was not developed, and because of it set back the entire franchise, that Silas was just bad.
6860, are we talking about the worst as far as competency, or are we talking about the worst coach in general? If it's the worst coach, I would put Bill O'Brien, because he single-handedly imploded a franchise.
That was his GM ability,
agreed.
Though.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Yep. That's more GM O'Brien. I think head coach O'Brien was okay.
He was adequate.
Yeah, I think he was okay. Like, if you had to hire one head coach today to coach your pretty good football team that's maybe playoff caliber, are you hiring Bill O'Brien or are you hiring David Cully?
No, it's Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. So I don't think that Bill O'Brien's the worst of those two. It's more difficult to do with different sports. 0315 says Kevin McHale was a bad coach for the Rockets.
I
don't like that at all. Obviously, everybody thinks it's because we're friends. No, it's because of the fact that with McHale, I mean, and people, you can chuckle all you want.
I'm just laughing because you like, no, you did an accidental name drop and you didn't even mean to.
Yeah, it's because the guys on Twitch, and especially certain guys on Twitch, love to come at me and say that's the reason I defend him. No, it's because he got sideways with the best player by making one hell of a coaching decision in that Clippers series and benching James Harden for the bench guys that got you back from a 20-some point deficit to win a game that ended up getting you to win a series, and James never forgot it and then wanted him gone. I think that he fell victim more than anything else to prima donna superstars that had to have it his way or the highway. But overall, I don't think McHale sometimes gets enough credit for what he got out of guys that didn't have the talent that some people thought that they did.
No, I think McHale was pretty good. I don't think McHale needs to be in this conversation. It's not because I work with a guy who's friends with Kevin McHale. I think Kevin McHale is a pretty good coach. 7503, David Culley was terrible. He literally had a GM telling him what to do on the headphones.
That's true.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Now,
so how far do we have to go back to where we get to an Astros manager
Bo
that
Porter,
would be
I was thinking
part of
that
the conversation?
Too. Yeah, Bo
Cecil
Porter
Cooper?
Was the first one that came to me.
I was thinking Jimmy Williams.
Jimmy Williams was awful.
And he's crotchety,
was so
too.
Bad.
He pissed off
everybody.
I think
we have to go back to Jimmy Williams before we put an Astros manager in the same conversation with Silas and David Culley.
See, because the rebuttal to general manager on the headsets was general manager that was telling the coaches what he could and couldn't say to his players with the Rockets that Silas was falling victim, that was allowing to happen.
Jimmy Williams was the coach the first half of the year when the Astros went to the NLCS.
Yeah.
And they got fired, and then Scrapp took over, and they got to the NLCS. So you could probably – Jimmy Williams belongs on that conversation.
He didn't make many friends when he was here.
Bo Porter's on there. He was overseeing the roster that went to the NLCS and to the World Series right after he left. I mean, it's a direct correlation of he couldn't do that with the same roster.
6517 says Brad Mills was bad. Brad Mills was bad.
Yeah.
That's true.
He was no good.
Man, they went through a rough patch there for a while, the managers.
They went from Durker to Jimmy Williams. They brought back Phil Garner, who was good. Uh-huh. Cecil Cooper,
not really.
Okay.
Okay.
And then they brought in Brad Mills, not good at all. Bo Porter was David Culley-ish.
Still had a winning record, though.
No, he didn't.
Well, at least in one season. Maybe not
Mills
not overall.
Didn't.
Porter went 51-111.
Bo Porter was the one that was taking the
air with 59-79
and then got fired after that.
I might be thinking of Brad Mills.
He was their bridge coach.
No, Brad Mills was – you're not. Brad Mills never had a winning season either. I think you're thinking of Cecil Cooper, who was 86-75 in his first year.
There you go. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
And then he was 70-79, got fired in year two.
Brad Mills got the job because he was Francona's bench coach?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
I think that I believe that to be true. I have to go back and check that, but that does sound right. 713-780-ESPN. Someone said Mike D'Antoni.
Nah.
D'Antoni was good.
They had some good years under him. The style I
like D'Antoni.
He was all offensive minded. I mean, he even made sure that someone else was going to take the blame for the fact that he knows his team doesn't play defense when they hired Bezdelic to be his defensive coordinator. But regardless of whether you like his hell-bent offensive style or not, it worked, and it got the most out of James Harden.
Yeah, I think you could say that D'Antoni wasn't great because of that, but I'm not saying he's bad. Like, he was at worst good. You know what I mean?
But just coming off of what I said and what McHale had to endure because James was uncoachable, the fact that you got the most out of James Harden for the D'Antoni years was doing something.
I mean, the Rockets, and since the championship, the furthest they got were with D'Antoni as the coach. So
D'Antoni doesn't deserve to be anywhere near this list.
McHale was in the Western Conference Finals with the Rockets.
Wasn't it Game 7, was it?
No.
Because the first time they lost in five to the Warriors, right?
Did we lose in six?
I thought they lost in five.
No, because that's the series where Harden finished Game 6 with the record for turnovers.
Okay.
At Golden
Either
State.
Either way, they didn't get to Game 7
I was
the
at
first
that
time.
Game. Yeah, it was Game 6.
Yeah, I think the only year they went to Game 7 was the year with
D'Antoni.
With Chris Paul?
Yeah.
Well, Chris Paul minus a hamstring.
They only went to the conference finals twice in the James Harden era.
Once with each guy, yeah.
And they went to the conference semis a ton with D'Antoni, never under McHale. And the year where they had Mikel, they lost the Western Conference Finals in five. They lost 4-1. They lost in five. And then, yeah, game seven in the D'Antoni year. And that was the hamstring with Paul. And the, what was it, 0 for 26, 1 for 26?
I think it was 27 in a row.
27 in a row that they missed?
Eek. It was 27, yep.
0392, there's no way you compare Cully to Mikel. Cully looked completely overwhelmed on the sidelines. That's true. Someone said Dom Capers. I don't think Capers was bad.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Yeah, Capers, he was okay. He wasn't great.
Again,
wasn't good,
all these
bad.
Other names that we're talking about were at least credible, and it wasn't universally mocked by the entire league and all of the fans of the league. David Cully is the one exception to that. Everyone knew that was just a ludicrous clown hire.
For sure.
4515, Silas never coached the team he was hired to coach. That doesn't matter if we're talking coaching chops, because Harden soon after asked out. D'Antoni was a terrible coach. Every year in the playoffs, he dropped from 9 to 7 players. By the end of the series, they were gassed and lost like 4 years in a row. But playoffs. And then the final one here, 6517. If anything, Cully overachieved with that roster. Cully won 4, Lovey won 3. Those are facts. Those are facts. 713-780.
David Cully and overachieved. I didn't think I'd hear it here with Texans talk.
I think they hit the over that year. I think they hit the over.
Well, that roster wasn't worthy of much, but
he won more games than Lovey did.
Yeah.
He did. Those are facts. What does Joe Espada have to do this year to equal or surpass DeMeco or Ime? We had that conversation the other day. Who's a better coach, DeMeco or Ime? What does Espada have to do to equal those two guys? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We were having the conversation 2 days ago. Who's a better coach, Ime or DeMeco? We all said that Espada needs to earn it to be even in the conversation. He's third of the three. But what does he need to do to be in that mix, Blankers?
I think to be in the mix, he's got to get you to the ALCS. He's got to be a guy that, you know, takes you deep into the ALCS and is a guy that continues the train going down the track at the right speed. I just think that it's basically his to not screw up, as opposed to the other guys that had to do so much right to get them where the Texans finished, what the Rockets are currently doing. This is a totally different scenario where you've got a guy that basically just has been empowered to not screw it up and keep it going forward. In order to do that, the expectations, whether realistic or not, are probably getting to the American League Championship Series again and not getting swept. But if you're in the series, anything can happen, obviously, and short of injuries derailing anything, I think that's where the bar starts. I think he's got to get this team to the ALCS.
I don't like looking at the result to determine if a guy's a good coach or not. I don't think that always translates. Like, there's guys who win championships that aren't good coaches. But
Frank
I
Vogel.
Like your – what's that?
Frank Vogel, Dave Roberts. I'm just going back
Vogel's
to LA
okay.
talk.
I don't think Vogel's bad.
He's not doing so well in Phoenix this year either.
No, he's not. But, I mean, he has a playoff team, right? So, like, that's kind of why the context matters, because is Frank Vogel a better coach than Ime Udoka? Vogel has a title. Ime doesn't. Vogel's going to be in the playoffs this year. Ime might not be. So, I'm not a huge, like, okay, well, this guy finished third place. This guy finished fifth. The guy who finished third place is better. The context of this matters. And the Astros are really, really good. I think the only way that Espada really gets into this conversation is I think you might have to win a World Series for Espada to be in this conversation. Because if you get to the ALCS and you don't win that, well, you know, you've been in the ALCS now. It'd be 8 straight years or whatever it is. You're not pushing the Astros over the top with your managerial skills. Getting to the World Series, I think it's World Series or bust. So I think it would take winning a World Series and then also making some critical moves that turn out right. Whether it's a hook on a certain reliever, whether it's bringing in Hader for, you know, an inning and a third in a critical spot and then it working. What, look, he had the thing last year where people pinch. Think that after Dusty was ejected, whenever he pinch hit a couple of guys back to back, I can't
Singleton in one of them.
I think Singleton went first. No, it was Yiner to lead off because he liked the idea of Yiner without any pressure. And then Yiner got that single through the left side, and then Singleton walked ahead of the Altuve homer. So I think it actually for Espada to like be in the conversation with Ime and with D'Amico, I actually think he's going to have to win it all. And then also make some moves during the playoff run that work out. And we're like, oh, man, that Espada cat, he's pretty good at doing what he does. I think that's what it would take.
To me, this comes down to exceeding expectations. Like specifically when we're talking about what Udoka and D'Amico Ryans did, because obviously D'Amico Ryans smashed any expectations even the most optimistic Texans fans have for them. And Udoka maybe hasn't smashed them in the same way, but he's obviously exceeded the Vegas win projection before the season. So to me, I don't think Joe Espada can get there. Obviously, if you win a World Series, and with Jeremy, what you laid out, the conversation would at least be there. But this roster, the way it's set up, I mean, we talked about it in segment one, they're right there with the Braves and the Dodgers as the clear, you know, favorites, the top contenders to win the World Series. They've been to the ALCS 7 straight years. I think a lot of people would see the Astros winning the World Series, whether fair or not, to Joe Espada is something they should do because the talent's there and it'd be more on the roster than it would be Joe Espada.
I just feel like in order, maybe I've set the bar a little too low. I think that because like, and I set the table by saying like, you know, these other guys are doing things that he didn't have to do. He's supposed to just not screw it up. But if I think Jeremy's on it in terms of maybe he makes a move or two along the way, too, that he gets full credit for that is a difference maker, because you don't want to be the A.J. Hinch on the other side of it that gets remembered no matter what he did for not bringing in Garrett Cole and the moves that he made. I think that it's probably that you get to a World Series. I think in order to be in the conversation with those other two guys, he probably has to win it. He probably has to win a World Series, and I think I set the bar too low.
Yeah, the bar, that's the thing, is the bar of the Astros is so high.
Yep.
And they've done it consistently since 2017 with managers that were not named Joe Espada. You know, they did it with Hinch. They won a title with Hinch. They did it with Baker. They won a title with Baker. And Dusty still gets criticized, you know, in a lot of different ways. I think sometimes wrongfully, honestly. 4-6-8-3, Espada has to make the ALCS to match the expectations. I don't think matching the expectation puts him in the same cloud with D'Amico and Ime with their coaching chops, though.
I think that's what the listener's saying, though. Like, just to meet expectation is ALCS. Maybe so. Like, mm-hmm. You have to – I mean, because that's what D'Amico and Udoka did. They went far beyond expectations. So if Joe Espada is going to match them and get in the conversation with them, he's going to have to exceed expectations, which unfortunately for him, and it's unfair, I mean, winning the World Series may not even be necessarily exceeding expectations, because that's what the expectations are.
I set the bar where I did for him to be acceptable, but if it's how he gets in the same stratosphere as the other two guys, he's got to win the World Series.
I think he's going to have to make a critical move here or there too. Like, I think if you just roll the ball out and you win it all and without making like this genius move, I'm still not sure that he does.
Well, but you think about it, Jeremy, the guys that live, the guys that are going to live forever in Astros lore are going to be the guys that won titles. So AJ's going to get his flowers. Dusty's going to get his flowers. I think if you win a title.
Is Dusty getting flowers though?
I think so, because it was his first ever World Series, and because they won it, at least he got one. I think he's all.
People at the year after he won it,
right.
People were ready to.
But that's not what I'm saying.
Like, you know, when, see you later.
But that's not what I'm saying. Once you win one in Astros lore, they'll celebrate you at a different level.
Sure, but that's not coaching jobs. Like, celebrating a guy for a champion doesn't necessarily mean you think he's a good coach or, in this case, manager.
But if he does that, I think in a lot of people's minds, he'll have done the same kind of things as the other two guys, because that's how high they build a pedestal for guys that have won a World Series. Yeah, you can come back and say the next season Dusty wasn't as good, but Dusty's still beloved because he got him another title.
I don't know. I feel like if you put out the approval rating of managers or coaches in like this little recent time with the Houston sports teams, I don't think the approval rating on Dusty Baker would be that high.
I think it would, because they won it, and because whether we agree with it or not, and we had all those things that we could easily point out that he didn't handle right or wasn't what we agreed with, the fact is that at the end of the year, we were saying, you know what, Dusty's Pawpaw's gut feelings got him a title. So whatever he felt in his gut that he went his way with worked because they won.
Yeah, but you saw the vitriol the next year.
But they still don't forget. And they forgot a lot of the shortcomings in the year that he won it. And once you win it, they're never going to forget that.
I think what you're talking about, Joel, though, is going to need some time removed. Like, I certainly think 10 years from now, you know, if Dusty, well, hopefully Dusty's still around in 10 years, but if Dusty celebrated with this team in 10 years, then, yeah, people are going to cheer him when he comes out because he's a part of the team that got their second title. But in the moment
Jeremy
now,
called
yeah.
him the, they're Jeremy, just so rightfully mad about so. It. Jeremy called him the greatest manager in Astros history. He
because
is.
We're talking about resume, but we're not talking about approval rating or his chops to be a manager.
I think approval rating is one over.
How many people were sad that he retired last year, Blankers?
I mean, we weren't.
No one was sad he retired
because they were ready
for him to go. I'm not
going
to say no one. I think the average fan was sad.
Very small percentage. I don't think the average fan was sad. I think very small percentage were sad. I think an overwhelming majority were happy that there was going to be a new manager for the Houston Astros.
I would disagree. I think
713-780-ESPN. Were you happy that Dusty left? Are you happy there's a new manager for the Houston Astros? Because that's the sense that I got whenever, you know, we lived last year and then when it all came to an end. I felt that really throughout the entire tenure of Dusty Baker. And the only time where I didn't feel that was for like the 3 month cushion of them winning a World Series.
That's us.
No, it's everybody. That's reading the room. That's reading the text line. It's reading Twitter. It's not just us. It's getting a feel and a pulse of the city.
I think once they won it, people change their opinion. And I think there are people out there that it's a different number than you think in terms of the fact that they love Dusty and they were sad to see him go.
For, it's not us. I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about the listeners. I'm talking about the city.
I'm talking about Astro fans.
Well, you said us.
Right, but I'm saying like Brian said, we saw it differently because we were engaged in every pitch and every inning and everything else.
Settle the argument, Hive. 713-780-ESPN. Were you sad to see Dusty go? Were you happy to see a new manager for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now I want to take a moment for Vanderford Air, and it's more than air. Vanderford Air is in the website, but the bottom line is Vanderford does so much more. We know that the most critical things that we deal with, especially here in Houston, plumbing issues, air conditioning issues, HVAC issues, depending on the weather and the season and the time of the year. And the biggest thing you need is immediate response. You need people that are going to be attentive to what kind of an emergency situation or what you're dealing with and do their best to fix it and then guarantee their work. That's why you go to Vanderford Air, because it doesn't matter what you're dealing with. If it's a plumbing issue, if you got leaky pipes or you got a pipe that explodes or something's going on, you need someone that's there as fast as possible. And when you hear that the companies you call or go, I'll be there in a day or two, you got to shut the water off, that's a problem. Air conditioning, especially when it's 100 out, you need somebody that's going to be there within 24 hours, as soon as they possibly can. That's what you get with Vanderford. Vanderford's going to make sure that they get there the same day in which you call, within 24 hours. Not a couple days later, they're going to be there so that you are not dealing with misery for multiple days and possibly a week. That's part of their money-back guarantee. That's part of what they do for you. They do great work, and all of it's guaranteed. Best values at the lowest cost to you, a comfort assurance guarantee, a quality workmanship guarantee, performance guarantees that the repairs or the products that they and the parts that they use to replace or install for you are going to work at factory standards and be exactly what you expected to get, with 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back being the best thing I can tell you. 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back means you're not going to pay if you're not pleased with what they've done for you. Check them out today, VanderfordAir.com. Better yet, just call them, 281-557-COOL, 281-557-COOL.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Were you more happy or were you more sad when Dusty Baker said, I'm done? Oso, Dusty will forever be remembered in a positive light. Normal fans don't care about Maldi Diaz, only diehards. Well, click. There we go. 4661, Astros won the World Series despite Dusty. 4983, I think Joel's right on this. Casual fans don't even know Dusty is gone yet. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Josh, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, man?
Hey, I think y'all are both right, really. Kind of like the other texter was saying. Most casual fans don't really care like Astros Twitter or radio guys care like we do. So, I mean, as a listener every day, I was ecstatic to see that Dusty was calling it quits. But I think, you know, as a casual fans probably like Dusty. He's just the old grandpa sitting on the bench, you know, with a toothpick in his mouth.
Isn't that assaulting, though? Like, hey, only a casual would like Dusty. Like, I think that kind of proves the point.
I think it's just a realism of the fact that we're not everybody is as serious as we are about sports or a lot of the people that listen to our show. And a lot of people just get caught up in what the TV, you know, promotes. And obviously he got a whole lot of love on the way to trying to get his first World Series. That's kind of where it came from. I just think that people, he's beloved. He's just a lovable kind of a teddy bear. You're right. I mean, look, we all know the mistakes and the coaching things that we picked apart. But I think that's what a lot of people still remember, the fact that he was pawpaw that got his title here.
5535, I trust in Dust. 6016, I was good with him leaving. 5240, bye-bye, Felicia. 713-780-3776, were you happy or sad when Dusty retired? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Isaac, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Isaac?
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
What's up, man?
So I'm actually 80-20 on this. I'm 80% happy on the Dusty departing and 20% sad. You know, I totally see, you know, him getting his ring and whatnot. But, however, I'm just excited for Espada to get the manager job, man. I want to see what this guy's made of. I am just excited for the team that we got. I see that we're stacked. And, first of all, you know, let's see what Espada got, you know. Best of luck to Dusty and with the Giants and all that good stuff, but we saw what he could do in Houston. We appreciate it, but it's time for kind of a fresh start, even though they know it's been for a long time.
Appreciate the call. 5010, happy may be a little strong of a word, but definitely looking forward to someone new in there. 9240, last year's constant lineup changes. Maybe happy to see Dusty go. 3777, I was apprehensive about Dusty Baker when they hired him. Felt the same when he departed. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. John, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, John?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing? You know, one thing I learned, you know, watching baseball all these years, when I compare A.J. Hinch rotation out of the bullpen, you know, to me personally, not knowing what pitcher to bring in, when to take a pitcher out, and that type of stuff, I thought Dusty Baker did a great job, and I thought that is very, very important when it comes to in the middle of a game to know what pitcher to bring in, how long to leave him in there, and all that stuff. And, you know, a lot of people, a lot of people don't understand that part of the game. But hopefully we're not going to find that out this season with the new manager that we have. I see he's doing all this moving around in the starting lineup and all that. And, okay, that's fine. But the guys, I don't care what kind of lineup you put up there, the guys still got to hit the ball. But, yeah, I thought Dusty Baker was an excellent manager. I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys comment. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call, John. Yeah, I think he was a good manager, too. I just don't think that people in the city were sad to see him go. And maybe I am speaking a little bit more to the more than casual fan. But I guess that's who I deal with. I don't really, I guess, deal with casuals. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line again. Josh, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. Long-time listener. Love y'all. Love y'all's show. I disagree. I really liked Dusty Baker. I didn't agree with his lineups, obviously. I mean, there was a lot of issues with the lineups that he put out every single week, every single day, in my opinion. But I would have liked to see him get one more run at it. I know his pitching staff, Montero especially, just kind of crapped the bed in the playoffs and for the most of the season after putting together a career season for him the year before. I'd love to see him get one more chance, but, you know, I'm also very excited for what Joe Espada can do coming up.
Appreciate the call, man. I think, depending on the demographic that we're speaking to, I think, you know, there's it could go either way, because I think that the casuals, they are just drawn to the good story and the lovable Dusty Baker. I think for those of us that spend a little bit more time, like the last call, like Josh, picking apart the lineups and seeing the mistakes that he made or the things that we didn't agree with or sitting Yiner too much or the Chaz issues or whatever it is, I think we were all excited and saying it was time for him to go.
Yeah, I think people were happy with Espada. I think people, well, even before that, just new direction. I think the approval rating for Dusty Baker was pretty darn low at the end of last season. 5-0, 3-0, so happy to get Espada. 6-6, 7-0, I was glad to see Pawpaw go, but respected the World Series. 1-1, 1-7, I was freaking happy. 4-6, 6-1, thrilled Dusty left. Feel like his decisions or indecision cost us 10 wins easy. 4-1, 2-3, Blankers doesn't speak for the city. Could not be more wrong. Everyone wanted Dusty gone. I think it's been proven that not everyone wanted Dusty gone, but, you know, where's the percentage lie? I think it's like 70-30. Brandon T, thank you, Dusty, but I'm glad it's Joe now. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I did grow to appreciate Dusty. Like, things that Dusty did that I didn't like were, I think at the end of the day, a little bit irrelevant. Like, I don't really care now. Maybe I did then, 2 years ago, what the lineup looked like on July 27th. Like, that does not really matter. What matters is trying to make your team as the best it can be by the end of the season and then going on a run and winning the World Series. And he did that. So I give a lot of praise to Dusty Baker for doing that. And Dusty flipped me. I became a Dusty guy. But I do think it was time, and I'm very happy that it's now Joe Espada.
Yeah, I am too. I'm very excited. I was obviously very critical of Dusty through his years managing. I was trying to, you know, judge it from the perspective of the casual fan and the fans all abroad spectrum of the Astros fans. But look, my own personal opinion is I'm extremely excited to see what Joe Espada can do because I think that he's the right balance between analytics and today's baseball. And he's also not afraid from time to time to still have a gut feeling. But I think he realizes that there's positivity in both of those things and that he knows the game and the team well enough to make those calls.
4865, I love Dusty. Was sad to see him go from a human perspective, but excited to have a fresh leader from a baseball standpoint. Happy to see a new leader. So happy to have Espada. I've never even seen him coach a game. Love Dusty, but no one was sad to see him retire. I think Astro fans appreciate Dusty, but would say Hinch is better than Dusty because of Dusty's frequent questionable decisions, but nationally Dusty's probably received his best because he won an untainted title. There's probably some truth to that. Dusty Baker inherited a great roster. It was more of a Barry Switzer situation. Huh. That's interesting.
But don't forget the whole cheating scandal that he was hired, the initial reason why he was hired, too. Barry Switzer, no one was dealing with that.
Yeah, I think that we overstate that.
I know you do and I don't. I think that he did it. I think if it was Buck Showalter, who they were considering at the time, that might have been a complete disaster and dumpster fire.
Why? What has Buck Showalter done that makes you think that would be a complete dumpster fire?
Because he's a massive dictator, because he's my way or the highway, because he is very, very – I think as much as we said Dusty's old school, I think he was a stricter version of old school, and I don't think that was the right fit. And because Dusty had the experience of dealing with a crisis-type situation, I think he was absolutely the right guy to handle what they were dealing with from baseball, MLB's involvement, Crane's opinions, everybody's, you know, that had a say in everything that was going on.
Hard to argue with the results. It's hard to argue. I mean, he got you the title, got you to a couple, so it's hard to argue that. 713-780-3776. Time for our car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a minute for my good friends, Chris and everybody at X Golf and Katy. X Golf and Katy is absolutely awesome. If you're a golfer, you are going to love this place, and you are going to make sure you go there frequently because it is golf at its finest indoors. It's the best simulators I've ever found because the putting is realistic. The chipping is realistic. You can actually chart your progress and it's track your shots. The shot tracker gets it down to the distance of every shot, the spin rate, the direction of the ball. You can use your own golf balls if you want to make it even more realistic for you as you kind of tune up your game. And you can play over 50 courses worldwide if you want to play a round in less than 2 hours. It's absolutely amazing, and the prices are less than getting around to golf at most courses, but it's also the combination of being a great golf simulator place and a great sports bar. Tons of TVs, great food and drink. It's the perfect mix of golf and a sports bar that you want to check out. Go there once, you'll be there multiple times. If it's raining outside, you lose your tee time, you can still play golf. Go to X Golf. You want to work on your game at night and you can't find a lighted range or figure out an option, you can go to X Golf and hit balls to your heart's content. Check them out today, X Golf Katie on the internet. They are absolutely fantastic. I'm telling everybody, now that they're open, you got to check them out.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Ah! Don't give me your bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
He's blank on Branham. What are we nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. How about this, Jim, from Joe George trying to math?
Can you give up either the Bears or the Cubs? You can give up the Cubs.
I don't watch the Cubs anymore.
Good. Okay. You gave up the Cubs.
Yeah, I don't have enough time in my life for that.
See, there you go.
What am I supposed to watch? 424. Is that math right? That's 642.
Oh, you got worse.
624 baseball games.
Wait, what?
Are you doing 162 times 2?
This has been just a banner segment for Matt.
My first math was close.
And then
it got worse.
We went from ounces to
pints.
324 was the number you're looking
for. He was never in the same ballpark. He was never in the same Wrigley Field.
How did Joe turn 162 times 2 into over 600?
His first guess was over 400.
I know. His first guess wasn't even better than he claimed at the end. Well, it was close to the first one. Closer doesn't mean it was any better.
He was never in the right hundreds. He must have majored in literature.
Oh. He still got to pass math.
Communication
degree? Where the hell did
that come from?
His dad was a teacher.
Oh, man.
His dad was a teacher. Probably got the. He was probably, you know, cahoots with the math guy. Like, how do you. He was never in the same hundreds.
No, exactly.
I mean, at the very least, you should know 162 is less than 200. So if you multiply it by 2, it has to be less than 400.
That's the very worst.
Taylor is right now at a point where she's getting into fractions and everything else.
Oh.
I would love to have just called Taylor and go, Taylor, real quick, just for me, real quick, what's 162 plus 162?
We should do.
I bet you she'd say at least something in the 300.
We should do Blankster daughter versus Joe math test.
How would you have gotten to the answer? If you were just right now on the spot, 162 plus 162.
Well, because you know the hundreds carry, so 62 and 62 is exactly what you need to add to the 200, and you're there.
I would have done 150 plus 150 is 300, plus 12 plus 12 is 24, 324.
Yeah, I'm more with Joel. The way my brain works is I would add up 62 and 62, yep. Figured out what that is, and then add 200 to it.
I like to get a round number and then figure out the rest later. That's how. But that at least gives
me the
ballpark.
I think we kind of both did that. We took the hundreds out of it. We knew there was 200 in the mix.
But at least 400? You're not getting to 600.
You get to 600? They would have to play 300 game seasons.
He doubles down by going higher.
They'd have to play every single day of the entire calendar year. That was incredible. That was
priceless. Where's Bob Barker when you get that? Was one mammoth miss.
Price is Right rules. He went over.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't win either showcase with that one.
What are you nominating, Blankers?
Man, there's a lot. I'm going to nominate the Milwaukee Bucks for having a 20-point lead against the Lakers last night without LeBron James and finding every way to lose, including getting to overtime and still losing. And Giannis missed an alley-oop dunk to win it. It was awful because I watched it.
I saw LeBron do I saw the highlights of it. LeBron was doing the
counting
little
10-second
count late.
Yeah.
I was rooting for the Bucks, actually. Just because.
Yeah, me too.
You know, playing implications.
Oh, and the Miami Heat for not playing Jimmy Butler last night and falling, and not or four starters and falling down and playing dead for the Warriors.
Yeah, but the Thunder aren't playing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander tonight.
I hear you.
So it kind of evens out. Hopefully the Rockets can take advantage of that. No SGA. That'd be nice. I'm going with Draymond Green grabbing Patty Mills by the throat. This guy's a walking problem.
That was a common foul, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't even upgrade it. It was a normal common foul.
Well,
he like grabbed him by the neck and yanked him down.
That was like in the first minute and a half of the game, wasn't it? That is a common foul for Draymond.
I didn't realize it was in the first minute and a half.
It was
of the game.
Really. I think I looked down at the replay and the scoreboard said like 5-4. I'm like, why are we doing this now at all? Let alone at all.
That guy's a mess, man. I would not want that guy on my team anymore. Sorry, don't want him on my team. Brian, nominate someone.
Well, besides Joe, I'll quickly go with Oregon State and Washington State. The fallout from the Pac-12 dying is they're going. It sounds like they're going to get their next TV contract on the CW. Yikes! Poor Oregon State and Washington State.
So they'll be there with a live in the ACC?
I guess, yeah.
How are
basically,
they'll be in
complete obscurity. No one's going to watch that.
What are they like? What are they selling? Like one game?
Beats me.
The CW's been just trying their hardest to try and get into the sports game. They're just taking whatever they can get their hands on.
No, I'm talking about the Pac-12. What are they selling to the CW? They're selling one game, I guess. It's kind of cool, though, that Oregon State and Washington State get all these like units from the NCAA tournament from these Pac-12 teams, and they all have to buy them out. So they're going to be sitting like on a mountain of money, and they just have like nothing to do with it because they're going to be playing non-Power 5 sports. It's kind of weird. All right, what's winning?
It's got to be Joe.
Yeah, it has to be Joe. But that's in a landslide. Yeah.
Okay. I'm good with that.
By the way, watch Josh Giddey tonight, too, because Joe said Josh Giddey sucks.
I don't like Josh Giddey.
Josh Giddey doesn't have a jump shot. Josh Giddey's a good basketball player.
I don't like his off-the-court decisions. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Branham. Come see the boys tomorrow at the Decoy. Coming up next, Glenn Davis, Soccer Matters, round two in the Killer Bees bracket. He'll be breaking down Copa America coming here in the summer. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston.